Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. It's the 1990s in a small office at the General Motors Assembly Plant in Fairfax, Kansas. Mary Barra, a low-level GM manager of manufacturing planning, rubs her tired eyes and repeats the same phrase she's been saying for at least the past hour. John, we aren't going to make better cars unless we start doing things differently. John, a plant manager from Kansas, sighs with frustration as he throws a set of engineering plans on his desk. Mary watches as he stands and paces around the small office above the factory floor. Differently. Why do we have to waste time doing things differently if it works just fine the way it is? Mary has just finished telling John that his assembly plant will soon be making a new model of the Pontiac Grand Prix. But this time, John and his crew will be using an entirely new system of production, one Mary created herself. Now, see, that's the problem, John. The way we make cars overall isn't fine. It's not even good. Every plant has its own system of doing things. What takes your plant 3 months to do would take Flint 6 months.
I think that proves my point. I've been making cars as long as you've been alive. There aren't any better systems out there than this one.
Look, I trust that you and your team are the best at what you do, John. You all work hard, we know that. But we're building a new car here. And now with Japan stealing customers left and right, we've got to do better. Everyone's got to do better. The situation at GM is dire. The company has been losing market share and hemorrhaging billions every year. Mary's job is to design a standardized system so GM can save time and money on manufacturing. John stops pacing to lean over the desk.
You know, I just don't appreciate executives in suits coming down here and telling us factory workers how to do our jobs. It's like you don't trust us when we've been the ones making the product. Hey, John, I'm not an executive. I'm not in a suit. You know I got my start in a Pontiac factory. I did everything short of mopping floors for years. So I need you to trust me. We're not asking you to give up control of your plant. We're asking you to listen to the teams we send in to launch the new models so we can be as efficient as possible.
John sighs again, this time in resignation. He sits back in his chair and looks up at Mary.
None of my people are going to like this.
No, they won't at first. But we want to make the best cars in America. And we're going to start here on your floor with your crew. I'm hoping I can count on you.
Yeah, all right. Good.
Now, let me show you how we're going to do it.
Mary reviewed plans of the new system with John for hours, taking him through a massive restructuring of the process. As she visited plants across the country to explain the new standardization, she faced plenty of pushback. At every single location, Mary found one common issue. GM didn't like change. She saw how managers would ignore good ideas simply because they were new. To Mary, that kind of thinking wasn't just disastrous. She knew it could kill a company. And in the case of GM, it almost did. In 2009, after a century of stubborn thinking, GM faced financial collapse. For 100 years, General Motors was the ultimate car guys club. But in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, and in the midst of the company's lowest ebb, a new leader would emerge. A former plant worker, an engineer turned manager, a woman in a man's world. Mary Barra would rise through the ranks of GM, tearing down the status quo and reshaping the culture of the storied car company. She would be the first woman to rule the GM empire, and she would ascend to the top through tough but fair leadership, shattering the glass ceiling and bringing GM back to life.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is Business Movers. Mary Barra lived and breathed cars. Her father worked as a GM factory hand for 39 years in Pontiac, Michigan. He loved to tinker with broken appliances and made things from spare parts. Sometimes he'd bring home new cars from the Pontiac factory, and after Mary finished her chores, she explored the vehicles from top to bottom. Like her father, Mary wanted to know how these machines worked and how to make them work better. At 18 years old, Mary started inspecting fender panels and hoods for General Motors, saving up her money for college tuition. In 1985, she graduated from the GM Institute, now called Kettering University, with an electrical engineering degree. Then she attended Stanford's Graduate School of Business on a GM fellowship. After that, Mary worked a variety of engineering and administrative positions for GM. But as Mary rose through the ranks, she rarely saw women in leadership positions. It was a male-dominated industry, and women in GM factories often faced catcalls from male workers, and they rarely, if ever, advanced. But Mary did, despite these obstacles. Her idea to create a standardized retooling system in the 1990s transformed GM. After implementing the system at the Fairfax, Kansas plant, GM saw the most successful launch ever. They made the Grand Prix on schedule with fewer mistakes and smoother production. Mary's system worked so well, the company eventually adopted it as a standard best practice for launching all new cars in the future. As a result, Mary's name got put on a short list of up-and-comers at GM, and she started to work her way up the ladder. For Mary, her success at standardization was the start of her career. But for GM, it was perhaps a little too late. Since 1908, GM operated as a key driver of the workforce, the economy, and American culture. But 100 years later, in 2008, the once thriving business would come to a crashing halt. Some faulted the spike of global gasoline costs. Many blamed the 2008 economic collapse. Mary saw another reason. GM suffered from internal arrogance. GM leaders before her believed theirs was the toughest company, and they would survive by sticking to the tried and true GM way. But when the government was forced to rescue GM from collapse, President Obama and his task force put the blame squarely on a failure of leadership.
Year after year, decade after decade, we've seen problems papered over and tough choices kicked down the road, even as foreign competitors outpaced us. Well, we've reached the end of that rope, and we as a nation cannot afford to shirk responsibility any longer.
This is episode 1 in our 4-part series on GM, In with the New. It's July 2009 at General Motors Detroit headquarters. Mary Barra rolls her eyes as she listens to another manager yell at her through the phone.
This new dress code is just not going to work, Mary. Me and some of the other managers don't see how it makes sense in practice, and frankly, you've just made our jobs a heck of a lot harder.
Mary Barra has left improving processes on the factory floor behind and turned her attention to improving GM's most valuable asset, its employees. She's now head of HR, and one of Mary's first acts leading that department was changing the 10-page dress code policy, a detailed but tedious set of guidelines that Mary found restrictive and stifling. So she replaced it with a much simpler directive. But now the managers are in a frenzy.
Well, Dan, I appreciate you sharing your feelings. Can you tell me why this new policy makes your job harder?
Through the phone, Mary can hear Dan, the manager, groan and grab the memo aggressively.
It just says dress appropriately. What the hell does that even mean?
Well, it means that managers get to decide what dress is appropriate for each situation. And managers should feel empowered to decide on their own and communicate those standards to their teams.
Can you just tell me what was wrong with our old policy?
Mary may be a soft-spoken Michigander, a woman in a predominantly male workplace, but she's no pushover. When Mary responds again, her tone is sharper. Well, no. Why don't you tell me what's wrong with the new one, Dan?
Well, some of my people have started wearing jeans, for God's sake, even during important business meetings. And it's embarrassing to have to tell grown-ups how they ought to dress.
Have you talked to your team about how you feel about it?
I shouldn't have to talk to my team. We should just have a policy. That's what policies are for.
Listen, I understand that change can be hard, no matter how small. So, talk me through your other concerns.
Well, there's some women who wear clothes that are too skimpy. I mean, this is a workplace, not some Saturday night on the town. I just don't know what to do with this change. It makes my job harder.
You keep saying that, Dan, and I'm beginning to wonder if you're telling me that I can trust you to manage a $1 million budget, but you can't manage a directive to dress appropriately. The call goes quiet as Mary lets Dan think through her words. After a long pause, Mary's voice softens. Dan, leading through change is difficult. But you as a manager need to act like a leader. You need to talk to your team, communicate with them, get them to communicate with each other. That'll do more than sort out these dress code issues. It will inspire innovation, build relationships. It's the only way we're going to get GM out of this mess.
Well, we'll find a way to make it work. But I'm not happy about it.
I appreciate that, Dan, but my job isn't to make people happy. Change is messy, uncomfortable, and necessary. Mary wanted to bring about lasting change at GM. And though it seemed small at the time, changing the dress code policy eventually helped create a more positive work environment, and it helped boost morale. But for Mary, the dress code was just the beginning. GM had much bigger problems. The entire culture needed a makeover, from the factory floors to corporate headquarters. During GM's bankruptcy, Mary faced a lot of tough decisions. In the past, GM often turned a blind eye to its inefficient operations. There were cash cows and cost centers, and everyone knew that. But Mary knew the new circumstances of the bankruptcy would mean the cost-cutting would have to go deep. When President Obama agreed to inject billions of dollars into GM, the government saved hundreds of thousands of jobs at the company and their suppliers and dealers. But with the agreement, GM had to cut 4 of its 8 North American brands. That meant closing GM facilities all across the nation, and Mary had to decide which plants to keep and which to cut. She took no pleasure in closing factories or putting people out of a job. But Mary understood that GM had to get leaner before it could become a sustainable company again. But Mary navigated these difficult conversations with as much empathy as possible. Other managers may have sent a memo and been done with it. But Mary felt each cut into the workforce personally. GM was family. So she called managers into her office first to explain how their plants would close and then offer the team's options to remain on a rehire list should positions open back up. But Mary faced an even tougher fight as the U.S. Treasury capped executives' pay, an attempt to penalize GM's leaders for decades of mismanagement. Mary went head-to-head with the United States government, leading negotiations with the Treasury and using her past experience brokering deals with union workers to her advantage. When the Treasury capped pay at $500,000, just a fraction of what most executives previously made, Mary pushed back for a compensation deal based on each employee's tenure, talent, and skills. In the end, Mary won a compromise that allowed for a few raises, several pay cuts, but most notably, substantial stock awards. She figured what was good for GM would be good for the executives and would give incentive for everyone to get the company's performance improving. In her dealings with her managers and in negotiating the deal with the Treasury Department, Mary looked for fair victories during a time of retreat. She believed it was critical to transform the company through improving morale. The old GM was often a bureaucratic and divided environment. Mary sought to change that. She recruited teams of people, from salaried office employees to longtime union plant workers, to reimagine ways to do business better. The teams who came together often proposed innovative solutions that made workers feel they were contributing to something truly important. Mary also started a Hearts and Minds campaign, one that tried to breathe an entrepreneurial spirit into the company. Previously, it would seem to take 2 months to make a decision that should have only taken 2 days.
So as HR chief, Mary brought everyone a fun gift, a big red button with easy printed on it. She told her team that decisions didn't have to be laborious. They could be as easy as pushing a button. Mary's changes started to work. As she encouraged managers to lift up and empower workers, employees began to take more ownership of GM successes. Mary traveled to GM's various locations across the nation, hosting brown bag lunches to listen to employees' concerns and sometimes make changes on the spot to improve workers' conditions. People began to see that bad practices didn't have to stay simply because they'd always been there. Mary also started holding more formal meetings from a cross-section of different departments of the company, a move that forced often siloed teams to talk through problems together. She'd encourage different departments to meet together regularly and share ideas, breaking down long-standing obstacles that often got in the way of finding solutions. As policies shifted during this time, nothing was off the table for Mary. All GM policies had forbidden employees from carrying cell phones. Mary relaxed those. Other arbitrary rules that got in the way, Mary changed or cut completely. Mary looked at policy as the state of the art of running an efficient company. But these older rules were both hindering progress and being used as scapegoats when things went wrong. Through her efforts, Mary made a reputation within the company as a listener, someone who cared about the people under her. But she also ruffled a lot of feathers with her pressure to change policies and encourage new ideas. Mary faced tense pushback from workers and managers alike, stuck in their old habits. Engineers didn't see why they had to meet with finance. Designers didn't want to waste time talking with marketing. People liked their walls and departmental cliques, each group pointing fingers at the other when things went wrong. Most everyone working at GM felt that they had a good system of doing business. They saw no reason to change it. But Mary knew if GM's right hand and its left didn't know what they were doing, or actively competing against each other, the company wouldn't survive, much less thrive. So she encouraged open-door policies for managers, where workers could speak honestly about problems. She launched surveys to workers to give constant feedback on the changing landscape and how managers might do better at communicating new ideas. And through trying to solve the problem of a lack of transparency, Mary uncovered more problems. Despite Mary's best efforts to force change, much of GM's stubborn structure still persisted. Before the bankruptcy, GM's management hierarchies were rigid and almost aristocratic. Once managers reached a certain level, they got a company car. A few levels up from there, they could get bonuses. And with each additional rung up the ladder, the perks and plush offices only got bigger and more attractive. Mary saw these status symbols as GM's old arrogance at its worst. She believed workers should be rewarded for results, so she tried to take a hammer to the hierarchy. Mary gave managers more control to incentivize workers through perks once restricted only to top executives. And soon, workers came to learn that doing things better and faster paid off. During her time working in HR, Mary was laser-focused on transforming the company's culture. But there was only so much she could do from that position. Lasting and far-reaching change had to come from the very top. In the old GM, everyone had their place in the pecking order. Mary shaking up the corporate culture below her was one thing. But no one told the top brass what to do, certainly not a vice president of HR like Mary. It wasn't the GM way. But the GM way had led the company into bankruptcy. In order to save the company she owed her career to, she would have to prove to GM's top executives that the old way was the wrong way.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cashback. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
It's January 2010 in the 39th floor executive boardroom at GM's Detroit headquarters. Board member and interim CEO Ed Whitaker looks through a massive stack of resumes and cover letters. He's looking for the right person to lead the company's communication team, one of the many vacancies in need of filling. In the room are top executives who stuck around after the bankruptcy to rebuild the new GM. All of them men except one, Mary Barra, head of HR. She watches as Whitaker paces the room.
Okay, someone with a brain, tell me where I'm wrong here. Why wouldn't we want to hire John?
Whitaker tosses John's resume on the conference room table and looks around the room. Everyone is quiet, nervously avoiding Whitaker. He's a bear, an intimidating presence who often dominates the decision-making in any room. But Mary straightens her back.
Mr. Whitaker, can I see his resume, please?
Mary picks up the papers from the table and examines them carefully. The room is silent, eyes expectant on the only woman in the room at the end of the table. Mary's face is creased with concern.
Yes, I think this is the wrong move.
The men around the table shrink away, bracing for Whitaker's harsh reaction. Very few have challenged Whitaker like this before.
Well, Mary, please enlighten me. Tell me why I'm wrong about John.
Well, looking at this resume, he spent a year and a half working under Thomas in global communications. I think that's where we're all getting the idea that it makes sense for him to lead the division. But it's on paper. When we look at the 12 years before that, he was all in product development and supply chain roles. And the 10 years before that, he was in global manufacturing. None of those roles were at a leadership level. Mary knows everyone in the company. She knows their strengths, their weaknesses, what drives their careers, and what could stop them. She also has a gift for seeing potential in people. Right now, Mary sees an opportunity to solve several problems at once.
I'm pretty sure John wasn't happy in manufacturing and development and moved to communications because he couldn't advance. There was no room to grow. I think he hated the people he worked under, not the work itself. So he made the switch to comms. It was to get out from under something that was holding him down. And what he's applying for now looks to him like the only way to advance further.
And you think we need to find another way for him?
Yes. Put him in charge of manufacturing. He's a smart guy, and the people in that division trust him, and that's the work he loves.
Well, but what should we do with the current head of manufacturing? Just send him packing?
Mary stands over the table and stares at the list of positions and divisions like she's plotting her next move on a chessboard. Some of the other executives around the room stand too.
Well, we have a hole in GM International right now. Let's move him laterally there.
Mary looks up from the documents and straight at Whitaker. He's a serious man who rarely smiles, but now he's beaming.
This is what we need.
Brows furrow around the room, questioning what Whitaker means. But Mary has a soft smile on her face.
You mean someone willing to tell you no from time to time?
Whitaker's smile broadens.
Yes, absolutely. Look, if we keep hiring people the way we always hire and the way we've always done it, we'll be the same GM that crawled to the Treasury for help. And I don't like crawling. We need to think differently, people. And this is different.
Mary was confident that GM had to change or die. And she believed she knew the right way to make the changes possible, hiring the best forward-thinking minds in the business. But that meant she had to convince the top executives first. To do that, she would work closely with the interim CEO, Ed Whitaker, and help him create GM's dream team. Mary's energy and experience became indispensable to Whitaker. Over time, she became the CEO's top advisor and sometimes his fiercest devil's advocate. She was smart, thoughtful, and decisive. Mary would walk back and forth to Whitaker's office across the hall to pitch new hire ideas or push back against ideas she didn't like. She spent long days and nights recruiting top talent, hosting weeks of interviews and preparing training sessions. And in the process, Whitaker came to trust Mary more than most other executives in the company. With that earned trust, Mary started making bigger moves. Before the bankruptcy, GM rarely made risky hires or fired bad apples. They played it safe, and in the end, it cost them. With Mary's guidance, Whitaker fired executives and reassigned others when they couldn't get behind new ideas. Mary's forthright style also pushed some leaders out who were stuck in the old GM way. And as the old guard left, Mary installed key people who were a better cultural fit for the new GM. Mary grew proud of the team she and Whitaker built together. But Whitaker was not long for the CEO job. His role was an interim one, and only to create some stability before passing the torch to new leadership. In September 2010, GM board member Dan Akerson stepped up as chief, the fourth CEO in the last 18 months. Luckily, Mary and Akerson clicked instantly. Akerson already recognized Mary's value. He often sat in on Whitaker's weekly executive committee meetings where he saw Mary at work. Akerson would continue those weekly meetings, leaning more and more on Mary's guidance as he steered the company out of its darkest days. And for her part, Mary welcomed Akerson's leadership and collaborative style. Even though he wasn't a car guy, he and Mary shared a critical eye towards GM's old practices. Mary's open personality and deep experience created a bond of trust with Akerson. That bond would be strengthened as Mary and Akerson disrupted old ways even more and fought to give GM a shot at a new life. On November 17, 2010, Mary watched and applauded with her colleagues as Akerson rang the opening bell at the New York Stock Exchange. Under Akerson's leadership and with Mary's counsel, GM pulled off its largest initial public offering ever. The government-backed company raised $20.1 billion at $33 per share, a price that would only rise throughout the day.
It's just a wonderful day for General Motors. I think it's a wonderful day for the United States. And I'm particularly pleased for the employees and retirees of General Motors. This is not the finish line for General Motors today. In fact, I'd say this is a new beginning, a new chapter, and a much better chapter than has been in recent years.
The government also benefited from Mary and Akerson's partnership. The Treasury Department would recover $13.5 billion from the IPO, reducing its GM stake from 61% to 33%. Many at GM celebrated the success of the IPO, seeing it as a sign that the company was truly steering a course toward profitability. Everyone except Mary. She was all too aware of how quickly circumstances could change. In GM's past, hubris was often its downfall. Mary didn't want GM's history of arrogance to repeat itself. And she didn't want the success of the IPO to allow the people in her company to slip back into old ways. So Mary got proactive. She set more ambitious performance goals for every department. She demanded that the current output be better, faster, and more efficient. But Mary's expertise in the car-making business extended well beyond HR. Mary was a senior engineer, a skilled manufacturing planner, and a firm but likable leader. She had already addressed GM's sinking morale and transformed archaic practices, all leading up to a multi-billion dollar IPO, but not every area of GM was thriving. Mary began advising other departments' leaders, everything from how to reorganize staff to how to make production quotas on time. Soon, whenever there was a hard decision in GM's top ranks, leaders turned to Mary. Akerson saw how his people responded to Mary's leadership and began handing off more duties to her. In Akerson's mind, Mary saw the big picture of GM's future unlike any other executive. And working harder than ever, Mary started to see her talent outgrow just HR. And so did the CEO. On January 2011, Akerson named Mary Senior Vice President of Global Product Development, a move that shocked many at GM, as it would put a huge portion of the company under her domain. It was the first time a woman had occupied that role, one of the highest in the company. In the position, Mary would lead the design, manufacturing, and marketing of every car GM made. It was also the division of the company that demanded the most money and where GM had the potential to see the biggest profits. Mary would oversee about 36,000 employees who made 100 different cars across 130 different countries. Mary was now in one of the highest positions inside GM, and she quickly became a public figure inside the auto industry. In October of 2011, Forbes named her the most important woman in car making. Industry experts asked her to share insight on how she climbed the ladder, but Mary ignored the spotlight, kept her head down, and focused on her work. She knew the road ahead was still littered with obstacles. One of those obstacles was the bureaucratic bloat in her new department. When she entered the role, she saw that three engineering executives lorded over each car model. She knew how too many cooks in the kitchen could allow leaders to shift blame and avoid taking responsibility. Mary cut down the committee of three to just one. She also discovered that GM lost about $1 billion a year because the engineering department kept making changes to cars mid-development, delaying manufacturing and driving up costs. Mary implemented changes that demanded excellence on time, requiring development to stay on schedule. She knew that doing things right the first time would save money in the long run. In just the first few years into her senior vice president role, Mary developed a reputation for demanding high standards, but also pushing her teams to solve problems together. In meetings with design and engineering teams, Mary would always challenge the group to discover the best way to make cars with the customer at the top of mind. In her new role, she reduced the number of automobile platforms and narrowed the focus of her job to four words: no more crappy cars. Good enough was no longer good enough for Mary and her team, and her rigorous standards had an almost immediate impact. In her tenure, Mary's team launched the Chevrolet Impala, a car that U.S. News & World Report would rank as the number one luxury sports car. And in J.D. Powers & Associates' annual survey in 2014, GM would rank first in six categories of quality, all vehicles made under Mary's leadership. Mary's greatest skill was inspiring people to excellence. She listened to and lifted up the right people, and she demanded those people make the best cars customers could buy. Mary felt like the company was finally on the right road, one where workers were proud to make GM cars again, and customers proud to own them. Her bosses would agree. Soon, Mary would have the opportunity to advance even further into her biggest role, shattering the largest glass ceiling of them all.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's December 2013 in the office of GM CEO Dan Akerson. Akerson leans back in his chair and looks at Mary Barra across from him.
Mary, I wanted to tell you before anyone else. I'm going to be stepping down in a few months. I need to find someone to fill my shoes. Would you mind putting back on your HR hat for a bit? Help me find the best person for the job?
Mary pauses. It's a difficult question because GM is not lacking in talent. She helped rebuild GM's ranks after the bankruptcy. And then again, when installing the company's newest top leaders, she worked tirelessly to maneuver the right people into the right roles. And she feels confident that GM has plenty of great candidates.
Oh, well, Dan, you've got your work cut out for you. There are some great people that can lead GM. Deciding is going to be tough.
Well, it might be easy. One of those great people is sitting right across from me. Some people might have jumped at this opportunity. Others might have demurred, deflecting the praise entirely. Mary decides to balance pride and deference.
Well, I have worked hard to make GM the best company it can be. But I am only as good as the people under me and the team around me. We have a lot more work to do.
You telling me you don't want the job?
No, but you asked me to help find you the best person for the job, not tell you why I want it.
All right. Well, I'm not convinced these two ideas are mutually exclusive. So what kind of leader is the best person to take on this role?
The person we need in this role is someone who won't stop at second best in the industry. They have to be obsessed with making the safest, most reliable vehicles in the world, and ones people love to drive. Any new CEO has to make sacrifices in order to make GM America's car company again, to make the company sustainably profitable for decades. They've got to do whatever it takes to win. Okay? So the type of person we need is someone who will do whatever it takes to win. Do you have whatever it takes to win?
Mary doesn't hesitate. I know that I won't stop until we do win. We have to.
Akerson smiles and extends his hand across the table. She's all yours then.
The GM Mary knew before the bankruptcy was on its knees, begging the government for rescue. Mary did her best to reform the company while under the tight leash of the Treasury's oversight. But 4 years after the bailout, Mary was eager to take the wheel. On December 9, 2013, GM reclaimed the last of the U.S. government's shares in the company. One day later, Dan Akerson announced that he was retiring from GM, naming his successor Mary Barra, the first woman ever to lead a car company in America. Mary paved the way for women in GM's leadership by stepping into a crowd of car guys as the new CEO. Workers cheered with relief and awe at the internal town hall announcing her promotion. Previous CEOs came from outside the company, but Mary was an insider. The employees knew her, and she had earned respect from her colleagues and fellow executives as she rose through the ranks with her attentive listening and intentional collaboration. Mary took over the reins of GM on January 15, 2014. Almost overnight, her face could be seen on TV screens and magazine covers across the country, and her rise from blue-collar beginnings to CEO in one of the most male-dominated industries in America inspired millions.
General Motors has named a new CEO, and she is a woman.
For the first time in its 105-year history, the company will be run by a woman. The GM board named Mary Barra its new CEO, making the automaker the biggest company in America ever headed by a woman.
I didn't think I could be the CEO of this company someday.
I stayed focused on the job I was doing. And I think sometimes, in industry, people are too focused on the next job as opposed to the job they're really doing. And that's been my focus.
Mary's extreme focus on doing the job right earned her the top spot. And many auto experts applauded the move. The data already showed that most car buying decisions actually belong with women. Now, with Mary at the top, GM was paving the way for more women to have car making decisions. But one thing still lagged behind the times. Mary's pay was far below that of her predecessor, even without the Treasury's compensation cap no longer in effect. Akerson's total pay in 2013 was $9 million. Mary's annual salary and incentive pay for 2014 totaled not even half that at $4.4 million. Mary's situation wasn't unusual, as Bloomberg reported that women in top corporate spots earned on average 18% less than men. But Mary never asked the board for a raise. She respected the board's decision about tying her pay to the company's performance. It aligned with her philosophy, so she focused on the task at hand, not gilding her parachute. But as Mary set her sights on improving the company's performance, a storm was brewing. About a week before Mary was named Akerson's successor, a GM field committee met to discuss problems with a Chevrolet Cobalt. A faulty ignition switch was causing the car to lose power, including to power steering and brakes, even at highway speeds. Engineers within GM had known about the issue for years, but they deemed it just a minor inconvenience to customers, not a safety concern. In order to issue a recall, all three members of the field committee had to agree. But people had already died. Dozens of drivers, mostly young teenagers and college students, would lose control of their cars after power steering failed, causing fatal crashes across the country. Mary might have known GM had a problem with the Cobalt before she took the reins as CEO, but she never could have predicted the wide-scale impact of the engineering failure behind the flaw and the massive public fallout. Mary Barra was the first woman CEO of General Motors, but her cars were killing people. Next on Business Movers, newly appointed CEO Mary Barra navigates a crisis as GM recalls thousands of vehicles after investigations reveal they caused the death of dozens of drivers. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery, this is episode 1 of GM, Back from the Dead for Business Movers. A quick note about our dramatizations. In most cases, we can't know everything that happened, but all our reenactments are based on historical research. If you'd like to learn more about Mary Barra and General Motors, we recommend Road to Power, How GM's Mary Barra Shattered the Glass Ceiling by Laura Colby, and Overhaul, an insider's account of the Obama administration's emergency rescue of the auto industry by Stephen Ratner. Business Movers is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Leah Waters. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Ritual Productions and Dave Schilling, Jenny Lauer Beckman, and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect forever.